Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the March 15th meeting of the LCD Board of Directors. I'll start with roll call. Susan Cox.
Present.
Pete Cox. Kelly Sutherland. Lawrence Green.
Here.
Michelle Weber.
Here.
And Heather Murphy.
Present.
And just for the record, Pete and Kelly are excused. I believe Pete's on LTD business back in Washington, D.C., and Kelly had a work conflict. Comments from the board president, that would be me. I will be making one change to the agenda, and it's just a better flow, and it's just for this evening, but we're going to be approving under the consent calendar a contract for a substantial amount for new buses, and thought it'd be beneficial for the board to hear Matt's presentation on the fleet procurement scenarios before we approve that contract. So what we'll do, if everybody agrees, is move consent to after Matt's item on the fleet procurement scenarios. Everybody okay with that?
Great.
We have employee of the month, and Eric is here to do that presentation.
So I'm Eric Evers, I'm the fleet maintenance manager. It's my honor to introduce Alan Schiff to you all. Alan started here in 2006 as a general service worker. About a year later, I moved into a mechanic role. Spent most of his time as a mechanic from then for about 15 years on the grade shift. I was a lead mechanic for a large part of that. He's represented fleet and maintenance rodeo three times, won it in 2019 and represented the district of WISTA that year. Just about a year ago, moved from a mechanic role into a supervisor role. So he's been a shift supervisor for the last year. And he's up here because that lady over there, Jennifer Longer, nominated him for employee of the month, which is perfect for him. He, under the category of collaboration, and that's Alan. He's a collaborator. He's always a people person, building teams, building relationships, and really specifically for the work he does with the ops team. The buses roll into the lot. He spends a lot of time collaborating with that team on how do we, where do we have park buses, what are the defects that are coming in, and makes life easier, not just on the fleet team, but on ops and everybody else. So, this is Alan Schiff.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work. Everything that you do, you have an interesting and challenging job, and it sounds like you do it very well. A couple of items of appreciation. One, you got that one. And I love these posters. Nice poster for you.
Thank you.
We'll get.
Thank you.
And our certificate recognizing
you as a
commitment to LTD and your.
Thank you very much.
Would you like to say a few words?
I just want to say that I couldn't do it without the team that I work with, my Eric and Matt, and the operations team, and all of my mechanics and service workers that work for me. They're the ones that make me look good on a daily basis. I want to say thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
I was so excited to get to employee of the month. I missed a couple of items on the agenda. So anyway, first of all, comments from the general manager. Jameson is joining us remotely.
Thought maybe you had fired me. You got that.
My
person sitting next to you there. thanks for allowing me to join by Zoom. I want to add one thing about Alan that I learned. He's a fan of heavy metal music, so just wanted to share that. I know we had a trip to Washington, and Susan's going to talk about that, so I won't step on her comments. The only thing I do want to point out is this week is Bus Operator Appreciation Week, and our marketing team has done a lot of legwork, and the whole team, in fact, has done a lot of legwork to show appreciation to our bus operators. There's a campaign going on that was on the news about giving operators a thumbs up when we see them. And we're just trying to show them some appreciation over the over the last few years that they've come through. And this is an annual event. It's happening across the nation. But what I don't want to get lost is the appreciation that we have for all of our employees, all of our frontline employees, the employees that you don't see a lot of, like Alan and his team, that enable us to make service every day, and the employees that are in the administrative side as well, that enable us to conduct business each and every day. So while our focus is on our bus operators, and we love them and we appreciate, they truly are community heroes. I just wanted to acknowledge that we've not forgotten our other employees as well. So I'll just stop right there. I know we have some good things on the agenda. We will have when we get to the part on the department reports, there's a couple items to pull out that I think that'll be of interest. So we'll talk again there, but I'll conclude my report right there, Mr. President.
Thank you, Jameson. Any announcements or additions to the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move to audience participation. I didn't see anybody on the sheet earlier. Do we have anybody? No. Anybody online? Okay, thank you. Board member reports. Susan, do you want to talk about the United Front trip?
Well, I would just like to say what an honor and pleasure it was to represent with the team for LTD. And I have to say, I felt like of all the wonderful agencies that were there, LTD had the best team. And it was Jameson's first time to participate. And so it was really nice for him to actually be able to interact with all the other agencies and to meet the Oregon delegation in person for the first time. I think that the whole concept of United Front, all of the Lane and Eugene Springfield organizations going together really does make a nice impression. And it's clearly appreciated by the Oregon delegation. They don't have to, they hear from everybody, and all the presentations very much emphasize the collaboration, how what one organization or agency is doing really does impact the other. Those participating, maybe we can show. I have some slides, so maybe it was Lane County, it was Willamette Lane, City of Eugene, City of Springfield, the the Springfield Schools, and LTD. I think I didn't forget anyone. So these are just some of the meetings. There's Tiffany and Jameson at breakfast, you know, putting together the schedule for the day. We also, the meetings, especially at the Department of Transportation, were really, I think, the most insightful. And it was nice because they were the agency that had the most opportunity actually for funding and that sort of thing. So the picture before was Jameson. And as we were leaving, the Jameson, what was her name? The assistant secretary?
Noria Fernandez.
Right. And so it was very fun to actually be able to interact with her a little bit. And Jameson knew her personally. So that was great. Springfield, Sean and making their presentation, the Springfield School District, that's us outside of Wyden's office. And then very fun is the picture in the office. And that is the picture of outgoing Chairman DeFazio. It was fun to just be able to be in that room where he had such an impact. Next is Jameson, and Mark Keem is Assistant Secretary of Commerce. And that was a meeting we scheduled. And he had a lot of information about how commerce and the programs that they're doing, especially in rural communities, is something that is a highlight. And I was impressed throughout the whole time about the importance of the rural population. And that really is LTD. I mean, that's where we are. And so seem like there are real opportunities to collaborate and make kind of the rural model program be something that LTD can provide leadership on, and then it can just be, you know, franchised across the country. So we had a lot of good conversations around that, but we just kept saying, don't forget, it isn't just urban areas, and we need to make it accessible for everybody. So I think so. Oh, and of course, it was great fun to see Val Hoyle. And it's true that DeFazio is, you know, big shoes to fill, but I feel pretty confident she's going to be able to do it. She said that the 15 votes was the best thing that happened to her, because she used those 4 days going around from person to person. Hi, I'm Val Hoyle from Oregon. And so it was great fun to be able to interact with her and feel very well represented. So let's see, is there one more slide?
Yeah, there's.
Okay, so this is Tiffany had put together, or with help, I think, is a sign that says LTD. It's a parking sign. She loved it. And then the city of Eugene gave her a picture of the Holt Center. And then Sean in Springfield gave her a picture, or a cup, a mug. And then that's a picture on the bottom right of Jameson and Val meeting. I don't know that they had ever met before. And this is the whole group, all of us together. We had a good time. And then Jameson not only carried the LTD flag, he carried the flag for the University of Oregon. So it was great fun. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Or the one thing I would note, everything that happened when we were in Washington, and Tiffany did a great job of putting things together, that was just the beginning. It all has to be followed up with staff when they come back, and feel really confident of their ability to take advantage of all the opportunities that were there. And so, congratulations to the team, and real appreciation to the staff that are going to have to follow it up when they get back. So, Jameson, I had to put the socks in.
Thank you, Susan. Definitely a lot of hard work went into the planning the trip and getting things ready. And even though you said the trip was fun, I'm sure it was very hard work. And
the hardest work was getting there.
Was walking a few miles in Washington, D.C. to go to all those meetings. So thank you for doing that.
It was great fun. Thank you.
Other reports from board members? Heather?
I attended my first LANAC meeting. Was that last week, maybe? So learned a lot of projects. And actually, I think the largest one that I heard about was actually going to be in Cottage Grove.
Nice.
So.
So we had I'll talk about the pension trust committee. We have two pensions, one for salaried folks and the other one for the ATU. What that meeting usually entails is a description of what's going on financially in the markets and with our portfolio. And the good news, maybe not so good news, is our portfolio pretty much matches what's happening in the markets. So it means there's been some down times, and we've had a little bit of up. The prediction for the future is that it's going to go up and down. Looks like that prediction's good. We had a fair amount of people talking to us under business from the audience on the ATU pension trust. The issue that was raised by retirees was the lack of a cost of living increase for quite some time in that program. And I anticipate there'll be future discussions around that issue. That's it from the Pension Trust Committee.
The Finance Committee meeting last night.
Go ahead.
We had a Finance Committee meeting last night, and we heard from Matt, and we get to hear from him again tonight. It was just, there was only one contract that we talked about, but then went through the schedule and kind of the format of the Finance Committee that's changed. And Camille did a great job of introducing that for us, and our next meeting is July 11th.
Any other reports? Great, thank you. So we're going to skip the consent calendar. We'll come back to it. The next item is election. Next item is election of officers. What has occurred is that Kelly has decided not to take the treasurer position, so that position is now open. So I'd be happy to hear any nominations for the position of treasurer of the board. Michelle?
I nominate Lawrence Green as the treasurer.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Any other nominations? Lawrence, does that work for you?
Yeah, that works for me.
Do we need to take a vote? Yes. I think we do.
Yes.
Susan?
Yes.
Pete's not here. Kelly's not here. Lawrence?
Yes.
Michelle?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
And I also vote yes. Congratulations and thank you doing that for us. Okay, fleet procurement scenario presentation. Matt, you're up.
All right. Well, one thing Susan didn't share that yesterday, she also became the chair of the finance committee. So she just knocked it out of the park yesterday as well. So
you're just happy it was very short.
I would say it was incredibly short. But I will say, as a board, the finance committee, I did get to present at, and the team in that group asked some incredible questions. So they set the bar pretty high as we kind of enter into this one, because these are big decisions for LTD, for how we deliver service and really what does it look like for the community. So in 2020, to step back a little bit, LTD came with a climate action policy statement that really wanted to look at other type of fuels. And as part of that, we looked at different types of fuels. And so you'll start hearing the reason why behind this partnership we had with a consultant named WSP. And we'll quickly go through this presentation. And I hope just my presentation style, if you have a question, I'll try to read faces as much as possible. Stop me. I think in the moment we can answer. We have some good time together, and so we'll continue forward. Does that work for everyone? Awesome. So mission, vision, values, just joking. So really the project, what's the outline of today is we'll highlight what's the background. The second is the methodology. What came up with what we were assuming to kind of give us some scenarios that we were looking at. Third is the results. These are the slides that I love sitting on a little bit, talking through, talk about the summaries. And then the last one is really what's staff's recommendation. You guys probably want to know that in the seat. So we'll go to the next slide. And project background will be next two slides. What's the timeline? So we said we talked about coming into a partnership. So it's multi-phase project. So the first phase, which really is identifying what technology is out there. So we identified that technology and it was a pretty wide swath, but we don't want to look at everything. We wanted to look at what's kind of viable. So we took that from first phase and then we implemented kind of the second phase project. So we were able to identify assumptions. We refined those assumptions, made sure what we were putting into what we're spitting out is actually accurate. And then we develop scenarios. So as we're looking at over a 15-year period of time, what are those scenarios going to look like, technologies as well? And then it kind of developed into scenarios, a 15-year fleet plan scenarios. Next slide. And so as we're looking at, I said phase one, here are the, for the transit fleet, what we looked at. R50, so renewable diesel mixed with natural or regular type of diesel. So you take a renewable diesel, mix it in a ratio, so they call that R50. So we looked at that. Then we also looked at renewable diesel, which is what we call R99, and that's about a 99% renewable portion. So if you're looking at fossil fuels, it's really taken away the majority of that, 99 to 100. And hydrogen is another one. That's something interesting in the market where people are looking at. A lot of agencies are experimenting on hydrogen. So we wanted to take a look at that. RNG, which stands for renewable natural gas. So renewable natural gas is really similar to compressed natural gas, which you know, but instead of the compressed, they're actually subsidizing that with the renewable portion. So they call that RNG or renewable natural gas. And then the last one that we are familiar with is electricity, so battery electric. So from that phase one, we narrow it down to what's viable to move forward. And those four scenarios off to the left, off to your right, would be the ones we dove deeper into. So R99, hydrogen, CNG, as well as battery electric, Gino.
Could you talk more about the renewable part of the natural gas? I'm having a hard time visualizing how it gets renewed.
That's great. So one example, maybe you're familiar with, so as a result of, you know, trash. We have a landfill out there, and as part of that landfill, it produces methane. And so they capture that instead of just off-gassing into the environment, you're capturing that and using that for making renewable natural gas. So it's a byproduct of natural occurring events. And then you just capture that to make it into a renewable natural gas. I will say with renewable natural gas, since you asked, you know, it's a little bit different where it's sometimes you're not really, some agencies are able to do this, but most are just using compressed natural gas and then purchasing renewable natural gas credits. So you're not actually diverting, you're diverting it from the waste stream, but you're purchasing credits for that renewable portion. It's still compressed natural gas that you're typically fueling the vehicles. There are situations, say if you fuel that Short Mountain up there at Lane County, that you could actually pump directly renewable natural gas, but that's very few and far between. Usually they put it into the pipeline. So, great question. Next slide. So our methodology, as you're looking at all these things, the sustainability portion, as well as the operational, kind of, we shortlisted the fuels, we looked at scenarios, then because if you buy a different type of propulsion, you just can't buy a CNG bus, you actually have construction associated with actually being able to fuel that. So there's upstream costs in regards to that. As you guys learned for the finance committee, you buy a bus or you enter in a contract. It's not that you get it tomorrow. You're looking at 18 months. So figuring out what the vehicle procurement schedule looks like, emissions analysis, the sustainability, and then lastly, what's the life cycle cost? What are you looking at as far as the overall cost of that vehicle? And this next slide is kind of similar, but goes in a little bit more detail of what you're looking at for construction and procurement analysis. You're feeding in your vehicle inventory, what you need, as well as your construction assumptions. We have an incredible facilities team that has been led by Joe and Randy, as part of the facilities project management team, has been involved in this project to figure out what's realistic as well. What's the local market? What are some costs to feed into that? Procurement schedule, then sustainability tool, because we want to look through that lens is what benefits do you have? Sometimes the benefit of a choice or values will lead you to a decision if that's one of the values that you have or the decision. So we wanted to look at what are the sustainability options when we fed in our scenarios. And then there's environmental costs. And then lastly, looking at the life cycle costs, the capital costs of the asset, what some O&Ms, which stands for operational and maintenance costs to maintain an asset. And then lastly, for disposal, there is a cost to dispose. For battery electric buses, batteries aren't just something you throw into the waste stream, you have to dispose of it responsibly. And sometimes those come with a cost associated with them. So now, pause, I've talked a lot. Any questions so far? Great. This result, this is a lot. I'll break it down in a way, hopefully, but on this side, really you're looking at a total of 100 vehicles. They're breaking in at percent, but LTD has about 100 vehicles. And this just gives you the percentage. About 65% of our vehicles are 40-foot buses. And then the remainder, 35 or 60 foot buses. And this is our current as far as what we looked at this scenario. Our scenario shows 30 battery electric buses. That's what we have coming. We anticipate putting those in revenue service. What we did, we were hoping last year, and schedules do impact that, but our assumption into this procurement plan is looking at 30 battery electric vehicles, 30 diesel hybrid. So diesel buses that have a hybrid component. We have 30 of those, and then we have 5 just straight diesel vehicles. And then on the other side, same 29, 60 foot diesel hybrid, and then 6 just straight diesel vehicles. Then you're going to the upper, would be your upper right and lower right. And this really just is a graph to show you when you make a decision to change vehicles or purchasing vehicles, it's not an overnight kind of decision. There's a plan to strategically figure out when are you replacing to maximize the life of the assets that you currently have, but strategically plan. And really that just shows over time, if you're looking at a battery electric bus or fuel cell buses, that over time you're seeing that that scenario flip. And so you're seeing different colors. I wouldn't get too lost in the weeds at the colors, but more to say that over time you're replacing a vehicle with another type of vehicle. The battery electric and fuel cells, as well as the renewable natural gas, there's an upfront construction cost to push you out further for replacement than if you are staying with just your baseline. This is probably the more complicated slide, a lot of colors, but in general, hopefully that makes sense. And in your packet, you'll see that. So if you really want to study, you probably can't see the differentiations of the color. So it's probably blurred, but in your packet, you'll see. But in general, as you look at a 15-year procurement plan, it takes time. It's not an overnight decision. Next slide. Unless anyone has questions about it. Okay, so as you're looking at the environmental, so we're taking that procurement schedule and kind of forecasting what are the scenarios that you're looking. That dashed line that you're seeing right here is sticking with our baseline being just continued with renewable diesel that we're operating off of and running and purchasing and replacing vehicles just with straight diesel vehicles. As you see the baseline, you're oddly, when you're looking at greenhouse gas emissions, two of those, what would be considered maybe more environmentally friendly vehicles, actually are producing more greenhouse gas emissions as a result of the assumptions. The two that are above here, the blue one is your renewable natural gas, and the one above that is your fuel cell electric bus, so the hydrogen we talked about. The only one that you find a decrease from the baseline is your battery electric buses. Next slide, we'll show that same graph over here, because I don't want to say that there are some additional benefits if we switch. So on the top right, you'll see NOx, nitrous oxides. So those, you actually see your baseline just sticking with R99. You do see some benefits or decreases in those. Similarly with PM, particulate matter 10 or lower, you actually see some benefits. So that blue line is overlaid the baseline, like dashed line, so you can't see that, but the baseline and the renewable natural gas are the same. The lines below track the same for the hydrogen as well as the battery electric bus. So you do see a benefit for your PM10s as well as your NOx. All scenarios will reduce the NOx from what the baseline is. And then the battery electric and the fuel cell electric buses will fully eliminate tailpipe emissions. So that's some things people are interested in. But what it doesn't do is there's brake and tire. You see those wear parts that you still are creating emissions as a result of that. Next slide. This is when I said results that I love sitting on this. So with all that information, really where the lens in which we look at or fleet or staff look at is really what's the life cycle costs. So in the scenarios, we tried to put an environmental cost towards that. So there's methodology behind that. And so you see the top, the green, the very top, is that's really the environmental calculation that they're looking at. The, I guess, yellowish, that's the operation and maintenance cost. And then the orange is what you're looking at as far as the capital cost. So the capital cost, as we said, not only the purchase of the vehicle, but also equipment supporting that. So for the diesel fleet, we have a fuel station out there. There's still capital costs to make sure that you're supporting it through the life of the bus. We can't let that asset leave. You have to continue to help with the fixed structures to fuel vehicles. Similarly with, you know, hydrogen, why you see a larger bar there is, well, we don't have a hydrogen fueling station. No one around here has one. So you're having to figure out how do you get one here. And that's a lot of capital cost to support that. In addition, hydrogen or fuel cell electric battery buses, as well as renewable natural gas, those are all lighter than air. So there's safety, lighter than air fuel sources. So there's safety requirements that we need to do to our buildings to get it up to code. So where you see larger capital costs than those are because of some of that. And so as we look, and this is, again, where I want to sit, is life's about decisions, right? We get to make decisions, and where we find ourselves, we have to make wise decisions. And looking at the whole picture helps the board as well as staff to make those. And so as we look at this, there is a typo, and I apologize, we will correct that, is the very top one. It's the baseline R99 isn't the lowest, right? It's the second as we look at that. So R99 is our baseline that has over the whole entire kind of 15-year period. The life cycle costs show that it comes in the second highest, where your battery electric vehicles as well as your hydrogen are substantially higher for operating and maintaining that. To dive deeper into what does that look like, as you guys probably all know, as your operating costs continue to increase, the direct impact to what we deliver and support to the community will decrease. We are limited in regards to how much money we bring in. So what this graph really shows me, or chart shows me, that decision, which can be made, does come at a cost. The other thing this doesn't take into consideration is range, is how far some of these other technologies go. So our diesel fleet easily can get 400 miles as far as delivering service. Most of our fuel tanks are 115 gallons. It's a lot of fuel. And so we can go multiple days if needed on a single tank. We choose to fuel every night so we can touch the bus every night, which is what we do. But that can't be said for any of the other, like the fuel cells or the battery electric vehicles. We're actually currently in some of our battery electric buses, not able to see it go more than 100 miles in the day. As winter, as colder months and hotter times occur, your rate as far as how much battery is discharged to go somewhere and come back is substantially impacted. So as I showed the outlay of what the replacement plan is, the assumption that the ratio stays a 1-to-1, I will tell you that if we invest in more battery electric vehicles, your capital costs will be reflected higher and higher, because you just can't support a fleet and a service with today's technology on the market for a 1-to-1 ratio. As many of our routes and what we have a bus out there is far exceeding that 100 miles, 150, and our MX is substantially further than that. So I wanted to sit on this slide. I will open it to any questions, any nuances that you may see, or we can continue forward.
Now, I'd like to clarify what you said last night, that the sooner that this decision is made, that it really does sort of set the price, that it won't, that it's locked in, and that it puts us in line to get the buses sooner. Is that correct?
So as we're tying it, this conversation into the finance committee yesterday, as staff's recommendation is to approve it, that does allow LTD to get a PO and a notice to proceed. And at that point, for the contract we talked about yesterday, does solidify a price. Obviously, if you go further, prices do go up, escalation occurs. So good clarification for that. Obviously, prices, you guys have experienced it. As you're looking 15 years down the road, you probably don't know what the cost is. You make assumptions in your scenarios. Good question. All right, next slide. Summaries and considerations as we're looking at this is, if you're looking at what checks boxes, right, from a greenhouse gas emissions, battery electric checks the box, right? So at, you know, where we're delivering, how we get energy here is very environmentally friendly. We get it from hydrogen and battery electric. If you're looking at greenhouse gas emissions just for service delivery, it checks the box. I will also say, because it was in my notes, is this isn't looking at or having conversations in regards to what is mining of batteries, what are those upstream impacts have. This scenario doesn't look at those. And I know there's conversations occurring in the community about what does that look like. It doesn't take into consideration that it's once the asset's on site. But from a greenhouse gas emissions, battery electric bus checks it. from local air pollutants, as we're talking about NOx in a slide, as well as particulate matter 10 and below, because it doesn't have tailpipe emissions, your battery, as well as your fuel cell, checks those boxes. When you look at environmental costs, as far as trying to understand what the costs are, battery electric buses are what gets the check, but again, nothing upstream of the mining or anything like that. Capital costs are $99. Operating and total costs go actually to CNG or renewable natural gas, which is a surprise. Next slide and considerations is if you go to hydrogen, make that decision that there's really right now only two manufacturers that are producing those hydrogen vehicles. So that not a lot of people in that market. It's still a burgeoning kind of technology, and so trying to figure out how it is. So two OEMs are starting to get involved with that. Battery electric. So as you're looking at vehicle availability, and I kind of referenced that earlier in the slide, is we assumed a long time ago we would have 30 electric buses on the road. That timeline has slipped and slipped because of what's going on with battery electric availability. There's the buses, so it continued to push out. So the lead times to get batteries are a lot longer. So you are seeing that and experiencing that, and we're experiencing here. Fueling time, and I'll point to Lawrence. Lawrence asked this great question yesterday about what does it take for a battery electric bus to get fueled. There are absolutely nuances, but really we identified 2 to 3 hours for fueling a bus, a battery electric bus. So when you're bringing that in to get it fueled, it takes a little bit longer in comparison with a diesel vehicle. The team is about 10 minutes or less on what it takes to fuel that to get it ready for service. So similar with RNG, there's two really fueling options. So there's a fast fuel and then an over fuel, or an overnight fuel, which is actually a slow, but there's technology there. RNG is relatively easy to fill, so you can fill up in a short period of time and continue on with service. Space requirements, we took into consideration of that. And then lastly, policy, as we're looking at that, that's obviously a consideration as we're looking at R99, is what's the policy implications really for that. For now and for the future. Next slide. So this is staff's next steps, and we've spent a lot of time taking a look, and RNG, as we talked about, as operational costs actually look and forecasts are less expensive. Why you'll see, I think bullet point number three, we didn't say switch to the fuel type of RNG, is because I don't think, and staff's recommendation is not to add more complexity into our fleet shop. You'd have to build and spend the capital cost up front for a whole new fueling station, as well as training technicians on another fuel type. Fueling station, training technicians to then introduce a fourth type of propulsion, as well as the capital improvements on the building itself. So our next three steps, I think, identified is the first one is we want to continue to explore. LTD is a leader trying to understand, but continue to explore to make as informed decisions as we can with the information that we have today. Second one is because of the environmental benefits we see with choosing to purchase renewable diesel, we'll continue to make an investment in that. With that decision, you're actually seeing a substantial decrease to LTD's vehicle greenhouse gas emissions. We are going to continue to do that to support our community's goals in reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. And that is a huge strategy that we've again implemented in 2020 and has direct impact. And then the third bullet point in the near term is continue to purchase diesel vehicles. As we were looking at the top one, is to really identify what that next propulsion could be to support some of these other goals, we'll continue to purchase diesel vehicles. As identified in our baseline. I think I'm done. So there's the next slide, and I think it says, thank you guys. But that is a lot of information, I'm sure. We've spent months looking through it. Happy to have discussion around it.
Michelle, do you have a question?
Yeah, just were there any other questions asked last night that would be beneficial to those of us that weren't at that meeting yesterday?
I think every question a board member asks is a
question. I agree with that, but I mean, after this recap, is that something that would like really help solidify in our minds that weren't there?
One of the more important points, and you made it, but this is the purchase that we're considering tonight for those buses. We're moving from the hybrid mode to the pure diesel.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good point. So LTD, and one thing, so it gives me another opportunity to that I didn't reference last night is, you know, Cummins, which is the one that has the market on transit vehicle diesel engines. They're actually coming. They came out and said they're no longer supporting the stop start engine, which is really the benefit where you like your car, your engine stops and then you go and it turns back on. They're getting out of that market completely. So the benefit really that hybrid can have is that so you can drive just on the electric. So yes, the decision is to walk away from hybrid, and it's an informed decision because the more electrical components you put on that vehicle, the more fraught with air it is having, and we're having longer lead times. So when a bus goes down with a hybrid issue, it's not down for a day or two, it's down for a long period of time. So currently, I may look to Eric for validation, but we have three newer hybrids from like 2015 on that have been down for, and that's just our MX fleet, down for 100 days or more, waiting for some of those things. So with electronics, it's harder to get things, and you experiencing that. So that's the things that the team are having to deal with. But yes, Gino, to your point, absolutely. The decision is to move away from hybrid to go to straight diesel, which will have an impact on service for the better, as well as operational cost.
That's not you. I think we were talking about other places around the country who are also experiencing, there's the ideal of what an electric bus would be, but that the technology hasn't quite reached that. Is that correct?
Yeah. To elaborate more. So Susan asked a great question. She said, I think it was just about electric buses. And one of my responses was just looking at, we're in coordination with a lot of transit agencies. There's a transit agency up north that are going to be putting in a BRT line. And we've been in contact. Well, how many miles are you getting on your BRT, your bus rapid transit, similar to our MX? It's a 5-door bus. And they said about 50 to 60 miles before it needs to charge again. So there's strategies to do that. Those strategies all increase your costs, cause you at a neighborhood station or wherever to stop and make sure your fueling gets up to a certain point to then deliver service as well. So yes, there absolutely. And I think that's what you're referencing in regards. And other agencies, TriMet's experiencing some scheduling impacts when choosing to try to figure out where do you put electric vehicles. In summer, in our current climate, we're experiencing, actually, those buses can go pretty far, not what a diesel vehicle can, but it's not the summer months, right? It's the winter months right now that we're struggling with to figure out, well, how do you put a bus out in service if it only can deliver consistently 100 miles? And that becomes hard. And what that does is drive costs up, as well as the quantity of vehicles you may have. So we just back of the napkin kind of thing that the service planners did for us is if we just said we had 30 electric buses, like, can we keep them productive? And there's impacts as a result. And I think the peak bus, what you have out in service, would increase by approximately 9. So as you think about that, you're not having a 1-to-1 ratio. You're having to supplement more electric buses, which costs more to maintain, which costs more to buy up. So elaborate a little bit more, but great, great follow-up.
So Matt, this informs this purchase that's on the agenda tonight.
Yes.
When's the next big purchase? And does this information inform us as to what's going to happen with that purchase?
I would say absolutely. So one of the commitments, we'll continue to look at what is if the technology drives costs down and how far you can get with a vehicle increases, so it's a one-to-one ratio, I think we continue that. But one of the commitments we have is that we're consistently keeping a finger on the pulse of what's going on and coming back and seeing if something changes drastically. But in the near term, the decisions or the vehicles that we will come, staff will recommend, will be diesel vehicles running on renewable diesel.
So in essence, there is a policy decision here.
There's a policy statement that we're still, that we're held to. And these decisions that we're saying, the short term, we're still meeting those short term policies. I do have, if we want to pull up the climate action policy statement, and I can walk through some of those if that is helpful. But I would say it's not a policy statement where we make this, we're out of policy. We make this decision, we're still within the policy guidelines that we have. We continue to move forward. And part of the policy statement really says, you know, when you're looking at environmental impacts as a community, it's not just what's out of your tailpipe. It's really driving and figuring out ridership. How do you get more people? And the statement says that, how do we get ridership with the focus in on that to ensure, because from transit, we actually have a net decrease of what our overall commute or greenhouse gas emissions are, because you're getting people out of a single occupant vehicle onto transit. And when you choose to do that, if you get more and more people on the bus versus choosing to drive a single occupant vehicle, the net gain from a community is actually better. So hopefully that answers it. I would say it's not, we're changing policy, we're still on track.
The one slide that you have where it talks about policy is sort of a negative. I think that I fully agree with the decision that this recommendation is, but I do think that within this community, the explanation of this decision is going to be, it's going to be important to explain that. I think when you talk about it, it only goes 60 miles or something like that, that's a pretty good illustration. But I think that there needs to be some effort to make the community aware of that.
And I will add that staff are meeting with Senator Merkley's staff to discuss the experience, and that was included in the United Front trip that staff were recently on.
Yeah, and I'll say LTD is a, if you're looking at the community, I think people are learning. We've talked to some local partners that are in that, the good company. We're kind of talking through these things, and they're understanding the hard thing. Most people that we talk into that world understands the hard thing. And actually, from a lot of those things, when you look at it holistically, if LTD continued to put as many dollars towards transportation, that's better versus some of what these other things may look like. Supporting a technology that might have zero tailpipe emissions, but do increase the overall cost of what you're doing and putting out there.
One of the things that we pointed out to Senator Merkley is that having a full electric fleet is really the goal and the desire. But if they're out there and they're not working, and that is what the community sees, that is also negative. So I think to be thoughtful about making the transition is really important.
Yeah, we're definitely not alone. I would say we're leading as far as the percentage we're identifying from other peer age or other agencies in general. So TriMet, which is a lot larger agency than us, has less electric buses than we do. And so as you think about it, again, I think decisions, you want to be holistic in your decision making. And then that's where staff, not lighthearted, are really coming forward to say the decision when you're looking at how we can deliver service really needs to be putting usable service out there as much as we can. And as you look at the frequent transit network, how can you continue to support putting service on those for usable transit? I'm outside of my lane a little bit. That's Tom's lane to talk more about service. But again, just it highlights as you look at that, it's a starch difference and costly. And then to your point, Susan, as we look at like what we call, you have a spare ratio, but look at what's usable. Right now in our buses that are less than 2 years old, there's four that are down and have been down for a long period of time while you're waiting for a battery or some other high voltage thing. So when something goes down in a battery electric vehicle, it's not down for a short period of time, it's down for a longer period of time. And we're experiencing, the team, Eric and the team is experiencing that on a regular basis. And that doesn't go unnoticed by our team, and something that we continue to want to drive towards to do. And our team is on top of it, but when a battery goes down, we know how to fix it. Our team is competent. You saw Alan up here, competent leader supporting the team, but you can't fix it if you don't have the parts.
Other questions or comments? Lawrence?
Yes, sir.
Going back to last night, I don't remember how wildly important it was, but so what becomes of the, hybrid vehicles that these vehicles would be replacing?
Yeah, great question. So with any of our assets, at some point we'll dispose of them. So at the conclusion of getting a bus in revenue service that can deliver service that you're confident, you'll dispose of those vehicles. So typically our approach is to auction those things off. We've recently partnered with Lane County to give them the asset, and they'll auction it off to hopefully have a broader swath of vehicles. A 60-foot vehicle, I'll just tell you, is not top of mind for people like, yes, I want that, because where am I going to park that? So usually, some people actually just scrap it, buy it and scrap it. And that's an evaluation we actually consider. What could we get from auction versus disposing of it via auction or just scrapping it? And sometimes based on scrap metal, you actually get more making that decision than doing something else. So great question. That all started from you, Michelle. So hopefully those all were things, if you guys can
see all of the different things that came from that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Simple question.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Any other questions or comments for Matt? Matt, thank you very much for your work and your efforts.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So now we can go back to the consent calendar. Two items. One is the contract for the buses, and the pension trustee appointments is the second item. Is there a motion, or are there any questions or desire to pull any of these items?
You can want it, Lawrence.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2023-03-15-016. It is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors, acting as the LTD Contract Review Board, approves contract number 2023-07 as presented.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there a second?
Second.
Susan seconds it. Any discussion? Okay, we do a roll call vote. Heather?
Aye.
Michelle?
Yes.
Lawrence?
Aye.
Susan?
Yes.
And I also vote yes, so that's unanimous. Thank you. Next item is the public safety update. I've got two names for presenters, Josh and John. I don't know who's going to present. Looks like Josh. Welcome.
So first of all, I'd like to say thank you for allowing us to be here tonight to speak a little bit about public safety. My name is Josh Schmidt. I've been here for 27 years. I am the interim public safety and system security manager at this time. I started out as a bus operator, did that for 16 years, worked into the operations department, became a field supervisor, did that for a time, and since June have worked with Frank Wilson, who was the public safety manager at that time. And since his retirement, I've just kind of filled in that role as the interim. So what I'd like to do tonight is just to give you a bit of a history on public safety, where we were starting October 2016, board approved public safety coming in-house. We used a contracted security. We went from WAC and HUT, which was a security company, to G4S, And then from G4S, we decided to bring public safety in-house. At that time, we had about 12 and a half officers. And due to some attrition and some layoffs at that time, we brought ourselves down to about 7 officers when we came in-house. That was pre-COVID. We had regular ridership. Most folks were, we knew, even our folks that had some mental health issues, we knew who they were. They were regular riders. We dealt with them. We had regular interactions with them, you know, just our regular type of folks riding the bus. Our interactions were limited in the negative way. We knew who our folks were. They were just, like I said, our bread and butter folks that were here all the time. They were just, we knew who they were. Ridership at that time, 2019, was low, 721,000 to upwards of 1 million boardings in 2019. Pandemic happens. We have reorganization. We have some layoffs. We went to a fare-free system, which caused public safety to have to deal with some different styles of problems, to say we had ridership dropping. And then at that time, we had a whole new set of people riding the bus. Fare free brought people that didn't normally ride the bus that were, you know, now riding the bus. We lost our core ridership. They stopped riding the bus. They found different modes of transportation. And at that time, we had to deal with some mental health crises as well. Cahoots, Whitebird, they weren't really servicing the community as well as they were in the past, just due to COVID. Things were locked down. So we were having to deal with those types of things on our buses, mental health crisis, and we didn't have the help to get them the help that they needed. We had mask mandates, which public safety dealt with as well. So people didn't want to wear masks. Some people were for it, and then they didn't like people not wearing the mask. So we had to go through those things. Regular ridership in 2021, low was around 294,000, upwards of 456,000. So you can see the big decrease in our ridership at that time. Post-pandemic, the ridership struggled to get reestablished. People were still a little bit afraid to come back and ride the bus. We re-implemented the fare collection. So again, those folks that had been riding for free, now we were, public safety was out there telling them, nope, it's time to start paying fare again. And so we had some pushback there. Staffing levels were still low. We were bringing people back. We began to add staff. We were still dealing with our mental health crisis, though. It took some time for those Cahoots, Whitebird, those other entities to get themselves back up and running. And then they had an influx of folks that had some mental health crisis that we were still dealing with, but we were trying to, you know, work with our partners to get them there. Ridership at that time, about 500,000. We started taking fare again February 2021. So what are we doing now? Where are we at? We've been working to increase our FTEs from that 7 to 15. We're currently at 13, and we're assessing where we're at with that number of folks to help us be in public safety. We also have 7 transit operations field supervisors that help assist with public safety. We have mobile patrols that are able to move throughout the system. And really what we're doing is we're looking to add another supervisor, field supervisor, for the evening time when we're starting to see more, you know, issues crop up. We'll continue to assess that. We're looking at our resources all the time just to make sure that we have those adequate folks out there and providing that presence that's needed. We're working with our PSOs to work on a more customer service based style of policing. In the past, G4S, they were more military style, and we had a more police force. But as we move forward and we see more mental health crisis, my vision really in being in this role is to have a more customer service base. So instead of coming up, and yes, we do wear a uniform, I've been instructing the officers to first off, start off with that customer service. Hey, how are you? How can I help you? What can I do to assist you to get where you're going? Because really, you know, our goal is to get people from point A to point B. That's what we want to do. We want to see people. And though they're having those mental health crises and though they're having those issues, we still want to be able to provide that great customer service and not be that police force. We're not police. We want to provide that customer service. Although we have tools, we want to start out first with customer service. So we're reviewing Ordinance 36. We're looking at that to make sure that we're, you know, following the policies and procedures. And it's something that I'm starting to look at to make sure that it was approved by the board. And I want to go through that again to make sure that we're in line with what the board is wanting us to do. And I'll be going through that and probably be presenting again to make sure that we're in line with Ordinance 36. We're working with our current agencies in our area, EPD, CAHOOTS, LCC, to see what we can do to work together to form a better, you know, coalition to make sure that we're looking at the community as a whole, not just LTD. We're branching out. We've looked at LCC recently. We've talked about an ambassador program. LTD is establishing an ambassador program with using public safety, the operations department, customer service center, and we want to provide that presence that's out there. I did a tour up to TriMet, and their folks are writing the system, and they call them multipliers. They have a brand on them. We're showing LTD, we're out there, and it's a multipliers. People see LTD folks, and they're more apt not to do something that they were planning on doing, and we're just letting our faces be out there. I think it's a great thing. I've seen our staff riding buses. They're out there. They're really, you know, putting themselves out there. And as we move forward, the ambassador program, I'll let John speak on that a little bit.
Sure. So I'm John Allen, representing Accessible and Customer Service today. Just to give a little bit more detail about the ambassador program that we're initiated. So I'm excited to talk to everyone about that. There's something that's quickly taking hold along the West Coast. So this is something that was first made popular in San Francisco on BART and has recently expanded. LA has announced a large ambassador program. And the idea is, how can we improve safety and customer service without over-policing is the question that San Francisco first posed. And so the ambassador program is an attempt to be able to do that. So this is a way to have a welcoming presence on transit. And so that's having folks who are highly visible with readily identifiable LTD gear to really note to the public that we're here to be able to help, whether that's answer questions or help make sure that you know, get on the right bus to know where you need to go. It also serves as a visible presence and a deterrent. So one of the ways we might think about that is, even if you happen to notice an empty police car or public safety vehicle on the side of the road, you'll notice people start to slow down. So I think that's one of the ways that we can look at having LTD be a more visible presence on our own system. Having us out there on the system is a way of creating that kind of deterrent that was described. It's also a way that where we can have staff available to both observe and report. So there are some direct benefits that we get from that. We can respond quicker when incidents do come up. And I'll also note that an ambassador program is not public safety officers. These are not security guards. These are not folks that are carrying weapons. These are folks that are there to help. So this is doing basic customer service, welcoming, answering questions, being able to provide help to community members that need it. So that's having staff available on the system itself, on platforms in busy locations, out riding the system and being able to then report back what are some areas of improvement that we can make. So that helps us with our way to make incremental improvement over time throughout our transit system in ways that we might not ordinarily recognize. I'll just give, and we've soft launched this program already, utilizing current employees that are on light duty. So this is a way for us to utilize folks who might ordinarily not be able to provide additional work while they're on light duty to be able to get them out in the system and provide value both to LTD and our community. So an example of ways we've already benefited from this, we already have transit ambassadors in this soft launch that we're doing, currently riding our system out on platforms in busy locations from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. We just started this last week. And we're already getting feedback about how helpful his presence has been. Just one example is out at Commerce. We'll notice that occasionally we'll have shopping carts start to pile up, and we need to notify local businesses it's time to clear those out because it's blocking the ability to get on one of our buses. So just having eyes and ears on that helps us be able to be good communicators. We also have people on platforms in busy platform areas, particularly on MX. So outside of U of O at some of our major transit stations, being able to answer questions. Also just creating a welcoming presence to help increase the perception of safety, letting folks know, hey, welcome to LTD, anything I can do to help you. If our folks are looking lost or confused, can we make sure that you're getting on the right bus, getting in the right place? Do you know which bus you need to take to get to where it is you need to go? And so we can help in those situations. We also can do some things above and beyond. So currently we have folks that have some I Love Transit stickers they're giving out to folks who want it, as well as safety lights. So oftentimes those are used on bicycles, on mobility devices, just to carry around. If you're at a transit stop that may not be on a busy platform, it can be quite dark sometimes, and being able to signal to an operator that you're there and to let other traffic know that you're crossing the street can be really important, particularly this time of year. We also note that providing great customer service is a really important skill for our ambassadors to have. So we're also taking people through a mentorship program through our customer service team. They're partnering up with our customer service staff who are experts in doing this and letting folks know, here's how to best welcome folks. And we're buddying up out on the platforms to really show folks how it's done. So to be able to help welcome, answer questions, and be able to create that visible presence. If you want to do next slide, please. One of the things that as an organization that I think we've all really taken to is Jameson has challenged us to get out on our system and ride more often. And that applies not just to us as employees, but truly all of us. And I would extend that to the board that this is an opportunity to get out on the buses with us. Wear your LTD branded gear. If you don't have any or you need some, let us know and we will make that happen. And not only that, but to report back what your experiences are like and tell everybody you know. LTD and riding public transit, great thing to do. You've already heard about things like people are concerned about their carbon footprint. Riding public transit is a great way to help address that. To be able to let us know what are the things that we could be doing differently? What are the things that we could be doing better? If folks aren't riding public transit, what could we do that would encourage people to ride? So us being out there and talking with the community, riding the system, letting folks know what your experience is like, letting us know what your experience is like, it's a really important way to do that. So, and then finally, I want to mention, we're just getting started with this, both here locally and up and down the West Coast, but there's gonna be plenty more to come. So we're looking at how we can establish additional partnerships. We're in conversations with places like LCC about establishing internships. We're looking at expanding our presence out on the system and seeing how it could be of a greater benefit. Things are no doubt gonna change over time, and you'll hear from us again in the future as we have more data to bring back and lessons learned. But it's a good opportunity right now. If you all have questions or if there's things that you might be able to help us better understand how we can utilize this type of a program, we're still in the very, very early phases of learning more. So we'd love to entertain any questions or hear more feedback.
Susan.
Well, thank you. I think this is really helpful. I'm excited about the ambassador program. And if there's any thought to expanding that more for volunteers. The bystander training, is that something that happens pretty regularly and people can be involved with?
Yeah, we're looking to set that up, and we'd also like to invite any interested members of the board to join us for that. So we're looking to include our administrative staff here. And again, the purpose of the ambassador program isn't for us to be public safety officers. It isn't for us to replace any kind of a security presence. It's for us to be able to observe and report back. And so a big component of that is making sure that all of our ambassadors are well-trained on expectations and responsibilities. We don't want anyone getting in the middle of conflicts. We want people helping other people, answering questions. And so I think a big part of that is sometimes things happen when we're out in public. What do we do when that comes up? And we wanna make sure people feel prepared. And so that's where we do have a public safety team and folks that are gonna be able to assist. And we need to be able to know how to best observe and report back so that we can help our community and be there in times of need. So we'd love to be able to have board members join us for any of that bystander awareness training, to be able to kind of be out on our system with us doing this roles. And that's also something that we're going to be extending to staff here at LTD, just to make sure that as a team and as an organization, we can all be aligned in both being out there in the system, riding our buses, being out on platforms, and being of service to our community in the best ways that we know.
Do you coordinate at all? I know you're not police officers, but with like the Springfield and Eugene police departments?
So public safety does.
Sure, yes. Okay. And since this is new, is there going to be sort of a 6-month review or something so we can have some idea of the effectiveness and be able to expand it?
Absolutely. I would say currently we're doing weekly review because it's just great. So new. So this requires pretty close collaboration and coordination. And so you see us, not just us here, but we're working as a whole organization, as a team, to make sure that we can be as effective and efficient as we can. And we're anticipating there will be pretty continual adjustments as we learn more as time goes on. I would anticipate that also would mean coming back before the board with some routine and regular updates and feedback on that.
That'd be great. And also, I would just like to mention that Nancy Nathanson was very impressed when you went to testify before her committee. She was taking photos and texting them. So thank you for representing so well.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? I had one. You talked about 15 officers.
Yes.
What does that really mean in terms of coverage? Like a 5 o'clock today, those 15 people, how many are actually out on the system?
Sure. So how it looks is just kind of like the pulse of how transit works. Of course, in the morning, things start out slow and it builds. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of the goal as we go forward. We always have an officer at Eugene and Springfield. So there's two shifts. There's an AM and a PM shift, of course. And there's, again, always at Eugene and Springfield. We have right now mobile patrol, so they're able to go throughout the system. And we have our field supervisors that are in the system as well. So at a given time during that rush hour, we're talking anywhere between four to five officers at a time. And then as we get to that 15 number, I really am looking at pushing more of my public safety towards that evening time when we're starting to see, things happen on our system.
And what type of turnover do you see with these folks?
Actually, we have a pretty good rate right now. They're sticking around. I think LTD is, for a while there, it was tough to get, you looked throughout the city, it was tough to get people to apply, but now we're starting to see those numbers come up. And I did an interview yesterday with a gentleman. And so we're starting to see that. And I think people are looking at LTD as someplace to go. And I'm going to do everything I can to hold on to them.
So
we're also, turnover wise, one of the things we're seeing is we're most of our turnover is people moving on to a more robust career in
Correct.
Law enforcement.
Yeah.
So we'll have somebody that'll become a police officer, or work in the court system or whatever.
Right.
That's where most of our turnover is. We have a long-term employees that have been with us for 15 years.
Yeah. Todd's been here for 15. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you.
How long is that bystander training? It's like hours, days?
We're planning on having a lunch and learn series that will allow us to best roll out bystander training. We'll probably have additional trainings that we'll add in to our ambassador program for our official ambassadors. That includes that customer service mentorship. We want to make sure that there's a close link with our public safety team. So there'll be some additional trainings, but I think this should be something that would be, the idea is that we can incorporate that into our regular day. So we'll make sure that the board has details.
Would it make sense? Would it be even practical to have one of those at a work session for the board? Or is it, that's what I was asking, is it days, weeks?
I think we can hours? Accommodate that. That would be easy for us to incorporate into a board work session as requested.
Okay. Josh, John, thank you for your work and your thoughtful approach to this issue. I'm sorry.
I had a question. So similar to Gino's question about like the public safety and like how many. So in terms of the ambassador, just like in terms of customer service, like so how many would you have like I say like on a shift at like one at any given point in the day?
Yeah, that's a great question. We actually haven't finalized that yet. So we're currently, as I mentioned, using some light duty operators as our kind of first wave of ambassador program. We'd be looking to hire on up to four currently ambassadors, roughly 25 hours a week, something like that. And I think we've been in discussion about when can we most be most effective right. with that time. And I think a little bit later in the day will probably be of most benefit, but I think we're open to adjusting that. So I don't want to commit us to a set schedule at this point in time, but I think typically we'd be looking to have a bit of overlap with particularly our busiest boarding times are going to be most important. Right. And typically pushing that into a bit later in the day and evening would probably be of most benefit.
It's really around that rush hour, you know, that 5 to 7 time is where we're seeing a lot of boardings and, you know, a lot of ridership coming onto the stations and networks.
Okay. Anything else?
Mr. President, if I could.
Yes, you can.
All right. Hey, every time I see Josh and John talk about this, it just makes me smile because we're going the right direction. To your question, Gino, about the number of public safety, you know, that number is going up. We're throwing more resources at interactions with customers. And at the same time, our ridership numbers are, 60% or thereabouts of pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So the number of interactions that we're having in the community is indicative of what's going on in our overall community. And we want to make sure that we're addressing things as they need to be addressed. I started officing out of Eugene Station twice a week. And I've seen I have a lot of interesting conversations down there. And a lot of conversations with people who are maybe just passing through our property, who may get on the bus or may not, they just may be passing through. And we're starting to see some of these things there. And also, you know, also in the Springfield station as well and throughout our community. So we're a microcosm of the overall community. So what we had as a standard for, you know, how many safety officers per, you know, whatever ridership number, that's out the window right now. So we're trying to work through that and see what that looks like. But also with this ambassador program, making sure that we're able to identify some things. I think wraparound services are critical in our community as well. But also to John Allen's point, you know, having us be present not only for the public, but for our frontline employees to see that we're there as well. And to take that information, I think John called observe and report. Take those observances into decision-making, into whatever role we're in the organization are going to be helpful. So I just wanted to answer that question for you that we're going to continue to assess that and take a look based on what's happening in our community. But our numbers are really kind of upside down if you would have looked at it from a few years back compared to now.
Thanks for those comments. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is written reports. Are there any questions or comments regarding the written reports?
If I could point out one thing, Mr. President. Sure. You know, back in February, we had to reduce service due to staffing shortages. And in that time and leading up to that, the planning team, the marketing team, and our HR team all have been coordinating to get better classes, operator classes in the door. And we're gonna graduate one on Friday, a class of 8, started out as 10, but 8 got across the line, which is about typical. But I wanted to highlight that in the packet, there are some statistics on our social media campaigns. And I asked Pat just to speak briefly around, you know, what that coordination between those three departments has produced and how we plan to move forward. So Pat, if you just kind of highlight just a couple pieces.
Thank you, Gina. Because social media, we're using a lot of social media, and what we're doing is we're telling our story. And what that story looks like is we're telling stories about people. People who work at LTD, the people who drive the buses, the people who work on the buses. What we want is for our community to relate to the people who work here. Because like you, or me, I'm going to go to work with people I know and like, and they're like me, and they have an opportunity. So we've told the first of our first two stories. We have more that are almost in the can and will release. But the first ones were about Leza Harris and her dad. They were in here in January. She was our employee of the month. And we've told her story about how she's a bus operator because her dad was a bus operator. She wears her dad's coat to work every day. And Brian's story is the other story we told. That LTD is a place of opportunity, a place where you can begin as a bus operator in another position, and you can grow into a supervisor's position. Got some other stories that are kind of going to come out here in the next few months. Todd's story is going to be an interesting one. And his story is his family rode the bus. His mom raised four kids, and they rode the bus. One day when the family didn't show up for the bus, the LTD bus operator went to the house to find out what they wanted. Todd had a cold. But that's the type of story we want to tell. We want people to know that we're not just, it's not about buses and schedules, it's about people. And what we have found with these first two pieces that we put out into the social media world through LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter is that we've had more applicants for jobs. So we went from, like for instance, the bus operator positions we had, you know, we had a dozen or so, but we had 60 applicants this last time. So we know that we can cast that net out farther. And those are, and that's what we're doing. And I also want to tell you where we're getting these stories. One is we're getting them by riding the bus. One of the stories we'll also tell is about one of our bus operators who has a publisher, has written three sci-fi novels in a trilogy. And we got that story because on a Saturday afternoon, I rode the bus and talked to her while she was doing it. So we're getting stories by connecting with each other. So there's not only this external feature to get more people to consider coming to work here, there's also an internal morale element to this. So Perry and I will be back next month, and we'll give you a little bit more detail about some of the things we're doing. But that's a snapshot of how we're doing it, why we're doing it. So if you've got any questions, I'm open. I can talk after the meeting as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Mr. President, and one other item I'd like to point out. I want to bring good stuff and also challenges. So one of the challenges that our operations team, Jake and Brian, who are in the room, are working through is absenteeism. So transit systems across the country and LTD have been hit with higher levels of absenteeism that we've seen. These are unanticipated absenteeism, so not planned vacations. We've been able to make service. We've been able to maintain our on-time performance at about 93%. But we want to keep our eye on that and get to the root cause on what that is. So just wanted to flag that, that it's not noticeable to the public in terms of service. It certainly does add a operational cost impact, but we're going to drive down and look at those root causes and see how we can drive on that. I don't know if Jake, if you had anything you wanted to add to that.
No, just one little tidbit. I would say that some of the issues that are related to our absenteeism would be the pandemic. And, you know, people are out there, they're driving buses. We have rear boardings. So we're known for our customer service. As you heard a lot tonight about that. And the first thing you do is you greet somebody when they walk in a bus. Well, that's no longer there anymore. Now they're going in that back door. So you have that going on. Mm-hmm. Then you compound that with a mask mandate. So you put a mask on, somebody doesn't put their mask on. So instead of somebody walking in the door and like, hey, Tom, can you put your mask on? We're not doing that anymore. Now we're over the thing, hey, I need you to put your mask on. And everybody's hearing that. And then it causes an uproar. And then it could be a negative interaction between the operator and the person that they're trying to get to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. That compounded by layoffs and then a bunch of people working overtime. So our bus operators really stepped up and they put in an enormous amount of overtime, enormous amount of hours just for us to provide the service that we provided. And I think they're tired. You know, I think that, you know, we just approved a huge contract, a 4-year contract, and it was a really good contract, but it was well-deserved. They deserve that contract. For what they went through and what they're going through with society and, you know, the mental things that are going out there as you're driving a bus that we're seeing, you know, I think staff is seeing these things as we're riding the bus for. And it's really eye opening. It's like, yeah, they do go through a lot. So that all lends to more absenteeism. It's like, hey, I'm just tired, man. I'm done. I put in 40 hours. I did that on day 3. You know, I need some time off. So I'm hoping that as we become more right-sided and we're, you know, have better resources in regards to bus operators, we're adding staff in our public safety department, we have staff riding the bus, it's just going to help that overall morale, which I don't see how absenteeism would get worse. I think it's going to improve. I don't know that that's the answer to everything, but that's just my short little one of the microcosms of why we're at where we're at today. And other transit agencies absolutely dealt with the same thing. We all went through the pandemic. Some was more impactful, but it was very impactful to our agency. That's about it.
Okay. Questions or comments around this topic? Important issues you raised. Thank you. Okay. The next item is any action items or information for a future meeting? I know Susan mentioned one about the ambassador program. I think probably staff took note of that. Anything else people would like to see on future agendas? Okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you for an informative and interesting meeting. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Okay.